All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. Looks like folks have trickled in here. There are four seats up here. I don't need all four of them. So if anyone would like to sit. Yeah, do you want to?
Sure.
I totally understand. Yep, there's a seat here, another seat here, some up front. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a chair squatter, floor squatter too. All right, folks. Thanks all for coming. This is great. I appreciate you all being here today. My name's TJ. I'm TJ Smolik. I am the State Science Supervisor for Science in Michigan and in charge of the new assessment that we're putting out this year that is going operational. So I'm guessing that's why this house is so packed. Y'all want to know what's going on. Okay. So we'll start where I always start, with our vision for a balanced assessment system in science for Michigan. As you all know, and probably why you're all here, that an assessment system begins with a common sense point. No one assessment or assessment occasion can meet all the needs for information we need from students about what they know and can do in science. So, when we think about an assessment system, we need to think about it from its inputs, opportunities for teachers to learn, opportunities for students to learn. Without those inputs, we have no assessment system, right? Then as you move into our system, we think about the classroom perspective. What are we doing in the classroom to gather data about what students know and can do? You guys have great systems for formative assessment, summative assessment, and everything in between in that spectrum in your classrooms and your districts. And then we get down to MSTEP, which is the very furthest away from students and a very small set of data that we can actually collect about students, because we only do that once every 3 to 4 years, and in grades 5, 8, and 11. And so the majority of information you get about what your students know and can do in science should come from here over, right? We wanna think, you know, west side of the alligator is gonna give us the most information. MSTEP's important, that's what I'm here to talk about, that's why they pay me money to do things, but we do want to keep in mind that our assessment system has to fill out on the other end as well. So as far as the MSTEP goes, we're going to talk a little bit about design. We're going to talk about how we're putting our tests together, what you can expect from blueprints, and then what you can expect from reporting and accountability. So all of that stuff's going to be covered here today, or at least covered to the best of my knowledge. If you ask me questions I don't know, I'll make stuff up. Okay, so when we put together our science assessment for the state of Michigan, there was a lot of talk around how are we gonna bundle these performance expectations together in order to make a test that's actually doable within a time frame that we have for state assessment. And so my team of advisors and myself decided that the best way to do this and to communicate it was to use topic bundles. So for example, in high school, we have 15 topic bundles that cover physical science, life science, earth science, and physical science. And those topic bundles are structured in our standards, structured in NGSS, so you know which standards fall within those if you look at those documents. So when we designed our science assessment, we chose to do that using topic bundles because the number of PEs as you get through, say, high school, there's 71 performance expectations, none of which can be assessed using a single assessment item, and that becomes a really long test. We don't want to do that to kids. It's not good for them. So we decided to go with those topic bundles so that we could be more effective when we were trying to assess students on the large scale. So what that turns into is this really colorful map. Come on in. You haven't missed much. I'm TJ. Hi. So this is kind of a graphic display of how we put together a particular item cluster for the science assessment. So we took a topic bundle, which is a group of standards. bundled around a topic, say like energy or natural selection. And we take that topic bundle. In this case, the example here is middle school energy. Middle school energy topic bundle has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 standards. Those are the letters in white. Okay? Each of those standards have 3 dimensions. Are we all okay on 3 dimensions? Cool. That's great. Okay. So we have our disciplinary core ideas, science and engineering practices, and cross-cutting concepts. So each standard has those pieces that make up the standard. And then we have this topic bundle where we have some commonalities. So if you look at PS3.3 and PS3-5, your cross-cutting concept is the same. So we can use those commonalities to help us be more efficient in our testing. So what we did from here is we disaggregated all of this, unpacked it. Then our item writing teams chose a phenomenon that could be explained using the information in a topic bundle. Okay? And those phenomena come from real world application of science. So whatever that may be. Once the phenomena was chosen, then we started to develop out what we call an item cluster. An item cluster is a stimulus or stimuli. The way I explain that is it's the story that you're going to tell the students to help introduce them to the phenomenon. So once upon a time, students were out looking in a garden and they realized that their plants were dying and wondered why. Okay, that could be a phenomenon. So the stimulus is going to introduce that phenomenon to students and usually provide some set of data that they're going to work with throughout the items. Then you have a set of 5 to 8 items. That's how we're bounding our item cluster. A stimulus or stimuli, so you might see this in multiple parts. It may end up that there's part of the story that's told at the beginning to introduce the phenomenon, a few items, and then you're going to have like an you're going to have a middle stimulus that's going to provide some more information that the students didn't need for item 1, 2, and 3, but they'll need for 4, 5, and 6, right? So that way they get the information at the time they need it. From there, the way that these items are built are to assess 2 or 3 dimensions each. So each item is aligned to at least 2 dimensions. So if you look at item 1, it's aligned to a disciplinary core idea, PS3.A, and a science and engineering practice. Item 2 is aligned to a disciplinary core idea and a cross-cutting concept. Item 5 is aligned to a science and engineering practice and a cross-cutting concept. But if you look at all of the information here for the alignment of the items, you'll see that everything over here is represented. So at the end of the day, an item cluster will assess the entirety of a topic bundle. Are there questions about this? Because this can be confusing. Yeah. Absolutely. The presentation is on the website. Yep, and you can just check it out there. And if you have other questions about it or need explanation, please let me know. Yes?
Get 4, 5, 6 wrong, right?
Well, yeah, that could happen whether you have 2 stimuli or not.
Right.
Yeah.
So
for scoring, each item is worth 1 point, no matter how many parts it is.
Okay.
So some of these items might have a part A, a part B, a part A, a part B, a part C. And unfortunately, due to our constraints with our system, we can only afford that 1 point. Now, what that does do is it does allow us to make a 3-dimensional argument that even though students have to do maybe 2 or 3 things, the combination of those 2 or 3 things is then 3-dimensional. So we might break it out and scaffold it somewhat for students where part A, they're really addressing mostly the DCI, and part B, they're really getting into some explanation or practice. But together as a point, then we're making the claim that that's a multidimensional response. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Does each topic bundle only have 1 item cluster?
Yes. On the test, yes, for sure. Yes. No partial credit, unfortunately. Nope. I'll get to more development about that in the future here in a minute. You're welcome. Okay. So far, we've been able to release 3 count them, three item clusters. Okay. I don't know, so I'm sure you guys are going to attend sessions about the life cycle of an item and blah, blah, blah. It takes like 3 years to develop these things. So when I've released three, that when I released those the first year we did it, it was 30% of everything I developed I released. And they got real mad at me for that. But I knew that we needed it for communication. More will be coming out, but it's going to take a little bit of time. Okay. So for right now, we have three released item clusters, one in grade 5, one in grade 8, and one in grade 11. The grade 5 one is a life science topic bundle. The grade 8 is physical science. Grade 11 is earth science. One of the questions I'll address later is how do we prep our kids for tests? Practice. Go online and practice with these. These are the online tools, tutorials, or the OTTs, we call them. These are available on the website. Go on and have your kids practice. If you teach high schoolers, tell them to do grade 5 and 8 too. If you teach middle schoolers, have them do both ends. Even elementary, have them practice all of them. They'll get in touch with the item types. They'll understand like how the stimulus sits on the left-hand side of the screen. The items change on the right-hand side of the screen. So it's similar to some other programs like ELA. You'll have a passage and some items that flip over. But it may not be similar to all of their testing experiences. So we want to ensure that the functionality, the buttons you have to press to answer the question, or the thing you have to do to answer the question, doesn't get in the way of kids being able to show what they know in science. Okay, so these are free and available online. There's also an annotated sample set that I put out on paper, and in that, it's a PDF document of all three clusters. In that document, I show how assessment claims are being made and how each item is actually being scored. So that's in an accompanying piece. Okay. On here, I just put a few slides as to how to get to these. So oftentimes, these slide decks go back to schools. So I just want to make sure that you guys know how to get to these. You need to use Chrome. You need to go in through the online tools training. You're going to pick science in grade 5, grade 8, or grade 11. So you have to pick the grade first, and then you pick science. You are given a username and password, and it'll take you into that test. This slide is showing some of the annotations that we put together for the clusters. And what this does is it provides some metadata for an entire cluster of how it's broken down. So in this example, it's the grade 5 metadata table. And so it shows there's a stimulus part 1 and a stimulus part 2. So this is what I was talking about, two-part stimulus. And here it explains what the item type is, what DCI, SEP, or CCC it is assessing, how much time it'll take, and how it's scored. I will say there was a little glitch this year. I ran out of time and didn't get a chance to update this. The annotated sample set still shows that there are constructed response items available. There are not constructed response items available. No constructed response items on the assessment. Okay, so that is the mismatch between what's on paper, the annotated sample set, and what's online is correct. Just so folks know. And I apologize, ran out of time. But this does still show you how the functionality works and what keys and assessment claims would look like.
But on the actual assessment,
on the actual assessment, no constructed response. All forced choice. Okay. Moving on. So in 2018 and 2019, we ran statewide field tests, which was awesome. Thank you for participating in those. And with that came some insights about gleaned from the data that we received back from the field. So in order to figure out some of this data, we have content and equity or bias and sensitivity data review committees that come in, and they look at the items. And we have one committee that looks at it from the content perspective. Is the science right? And so when the data comes in, we have p-values and correlation values that the committees determine with guidance from our psychometricians in training whether or not an item is performing as expected. So if you have an item cluster where our p-values are relatively low, that's going to tell us that most students are not getting these answers correct. Okay? So that's okay. We can have hard stuff on a test. We should have hard stuff on a test. But we shouldn't have all hard stuff on a test, right? And so when those p-values get really low below our threshold, we start to take a look at those from the content perspective and say, well, okay, is the question framed properly? Are we asking something that's confusing? Is there a particular choice that they could choose that more kids are choosing, even though it's not the answer? How can we shape this question up to be better for kids? And so we do that for the entire test. So we train teachers and researchers to do this, and then they recommend whether we should accept, reject, or revise an item cluster based on their findings. And then those accepted clusters move on to an operational phase, and rejected or revised clusters move back to revisions. So we've had 2 years, thankfully, of field tests to provide lots and lots of data in order for us to get to an operational phase this year. Most tests typically only have 1 year. So I begged, borrowed, and stole 2 years of time. So some insights from these opportunities is opportunity to learn is still an issue. We really need to think about how our students, especially in elementary school, are gaining access to standards K1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So in general, in grade 5, kids, it seems, struggled to be able to answer questions. In grade 8, we saw that physical science was particularly challenging for students. And within that, the cluster about waves and electromagnetic radiation, really struggling for 8th graders. That's a hard one. And then in grade 11, earth science. There's a lot of schools that don't even teach it. I will tell you, my kids' high school is one of them. We're working to change that. But we need to figure out how all students can gain access to all standards. So the data is showing this in our large scale assessment. So I can imagine as you guys are developing out and thinking about your full assessment system, you're probably seeing some similar trends. Maybe. Okay. Interestingly, life science clusters have the best data. For 1 minute, turn and talk to an elbow partner about why you think that might be. Okay. Thank you. Would anyone like to share their thoughts about why life science might be performing the best?
Yeah. I know in our schools particularly, especially in the K-8s, it's the easiest thing for the teachers to teach, and they teach it every year. And physics typically gets pushed to the end of the year, and they run out of time, or it's just hard. So that's the one that gets the least instructional hours.
Other thoughts? Or was that a general consensus?
Life science is fun.
We get to dig in the dirt and play with chickens. Yeah.
Usually with waves, you have to apply your knowledge versus just, you could, life science, you can just answer quickly. But with anything that's physical, you have to apply your knowledge to multi-steps.
Okay. So to think about the learning, the opportunity to learn issues with physical science and waves, oftentimes this takes a further step of application. I would also argue that it is an idea that waves exist other than water, and it's hard to see, right? So it's an abstract idea. It's not baby chicks in the classroom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the misnomer that biology is a graduation requirement for the state may still be perseverating this. It is not a biology requirement for the state. However, it may be a biology, or it may be a graduation requirement for the district. So if you have more questions about that, we can chat. Other ideas? Yeah.
I think the challenge is the instructional shift or that the adults have to make with other content that are more difficult.
Sure.
Because they are not feeling as comfortable in delivering that.
Right. So there's a lot of instructional shifts that need to take place in order to deliver to deliver this kind of content. Absolutely. So the lack of materials that are something different than life science. We have lots of maybe basic materials or legacy materials about life science that we can use in our classrooms, but maybe we don't have others. Another thing that I heard from a lot of my committee members and as I did some of my own personal research across the state is that for grade 11, there's lack of incentive for doing well on the assessment. What? Who knew? Right? So I talked to about 30 11th graders across the state of Michigan this year, and the majority of them said, we took SAT for 2 days, and then we took ACT work keys, and then we took the social studies test, and then we took the science test, and by that time, I was clicking through to get it done. Sound familiar? My eighth grader said the same thing too. I get it. So kind of this lack of accountability for students around the MSEP makes it really difficult for them to have really any internal or external incentive or motivation to do well on the MSEP. And that's not to say it's not important. It is important. I just want to be really real about what we tend to see and maybe be able to think about ways that we can help to solve that problem. Yeah, oftentimes it's the third day of testing. Now, it's not required to be that way. SAT has to be taken on a certain day, but we've kind of fallen into school schedules that work, I think, or we think work, and oftentimes it falls on the third day after the really hard stuff or the stuff that counts more. So we need to think about that because what's happening at the state level is it's skewing our data, right? So when we have 100,000 kids, and I'm not saying all of them have no motivation to do well in the MSTEP. That would be a very large generalization. But if some of them do not have any incentive to do or don't have the incentive to do well, then we have a data skewing problem. And it makes it really hard for me to tell if the items are bad, the instruction is not happening, like what's going on, right? So that's a problem we need to be thinking about more broadly. And so I just wanted you to be aware of that, that was one of the insights that came up from our data. Okay, here's the good stuff. This is what the test is going to look like. This means nothing to you, I know. So this would be a sample blueprint for a test in science. Remember when we talked about item clusters, all the stuff that's bunched together with the items and the stimulus? Yeah. Each one of these cells represents one of those. So for example, on form one, a student would take the second, whatever that is, topic bundle in earth science. And they would take a life science topic bundle. And then they'll take a physical science one. And then we're going to embed a field test somewhere in there. And then they're going to do it again, earth science, life science, physical science. Okay. Now you'll see that in red, we can see that. Across the forms, we have anchoring clusters. So these are clusters that we have chosen to be common across all forms to help us equate all forms across all students. Does that make sense? So for example, in 11th grade, because we're new to this and we need lots of field test slots and we only get one per form, there's 10 forms. Boy, was that a doozy. But we built it, and so 1 out of 10 students is going to get a different form of the test. Okay? But they're all going to be in this setup. So an earth science, a life science, a physical science, a field test somewhere embedded in there, another earth science, another life science, and another physical science. So they'll get two topic bundles from each domain. And if you remember back to the slide I showed you earlier, there are five topic bundles in each domain. So every student across a sample will get two of those. Across the entire population, we're assessing all of them. So it's matrix sampling. Okay, so that's what the stuff in black shows. So physical science one is, this is topic bundle one, let's call it, is common across all clusters. So all students will get the same physical science cluster at some point. But in the third position here, you'll have physical science two, three, four, and five. Okay, so all those topic bundles, energy, chemistry, chemical reactions, forces and interactions, waves, and structure and something, function? No, no, that's... Thank you, structure and properties of matter, I appreciate you. those will all be represented across the sampling of students across Michigan. Does that make sense? And the same is true for life science and earth science. I see a hand in the back, in the window, to the window. Say that one more time. No. So the student is, so the operational items, which come from everything but the field test, so on form one, there's 44 operational items. That will play into the score, or that will count for the score for every student that takes form one. Now, here's the hard part. This is going to hurt. Form two only has 42 items. Form three has 43 items, and form four has 44 items. Okay? We have a three-item range between our forms, and the reason that we can't make them all equal is because if you remember, we went back and said item clusters can be 3 or 5 to 8 items long, yeah? And we also said that those items can have multiple parts. So, item, say in this physical science item cluster, say one of those items has 3 parts. But an item in this physical science cluster only has 1 part. So our psychometricians have a way of scaling all of that to ensure equity among students who take forms. Does that make sense? Now, what is innately inequitable about matrix sampling, I'm going to put it right out there, is if you hold dear to chemical reactions and that is your baby, and you just happen to get the form that chemical reactions isn't assessed on your test, that stinks. Okay? But it's going to happen. Remember, the purpose of the large-scale test is to show whether across programs we are giving all students opportunity to learn all standards. Okay? So what this doesn't do is allow the student with the very favorite subject area to shine, necessarily. Okay? Maybe they will get it, and you know, they'll bang it out of the park, but that will happen. Yep. Well, we're working on it. And as long as your district is bigger than 10 students, along with enough items, right, for our psychometricians to be happy, you will get information across all of this. So the information you get at the district level will include all of the forms, all of the item clusters that the students participated with, and all of those will cover the topic bundles. Yes. All grades, yes. Yes.
So, life science one, how was it
feedback from all students?
Oh, that's a really good question. How did I determine which one went across forms? Honestly, it was the ones that my psychometrician and I sat down together, looked at the statistics on, and found that we're performing, that we're behaving the way we wanted to the best. So we picked the item clusters that were performing the best. Now, that doesn't mean that all students got it right. It just meant there was a variety of information coming in from that item cluster that allowed us to differentiate student performance. I'll go here, and then there, and then there. If I forget, please raise your hand again.
Will it say anywhere on their test ticket or anywhere which form they're taking?
No, I don't think so. No. Thanks, Bree. Back here, yes.
So the reporting back,
yes.
Do we know how many kids took which form?
No. Yes.
So this spring, right, you choose your domain for life science one, but that domain can change next year.
Okay, so I just want to be really specific about our language. The domain won't change. There will always be a life science cluster there. But the topic bundle might change. If for some reason Life Science 1 tanks this year, then we're probably not going to put it back in a position of commonality across forms. Yeah. Yes?
Did you make up that last answer that you just gave me, or was that true?
That was true. I eyed Bree over here, and she was giving me the nod. So I didn't make that one up. I haven't made anything up yet, I don't think. I'll set off a signal if I do. Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. So, on to reporting, our favorite topic. Let me take a breath, because this is going to be rough. No. Okay, so reports for individual students in science are going to look like your other reports. Okay? So, there's commonality across reports. You'll still get this color scheme with the margin of error and the bar that shows the scale score of where the student fell. Right? Are we all familiar with this? Seen this before? Know it? Love it? Cool. All right. So the reporting will include an overall scaled score for science. So the student will get a scale score for science. 1272. That I made up. Okay? That scale score is determined by our psychometricians once they do the scaling. That's a whole bunch of stuff I don't understand. But it happens, and I know it works because we're writing papers about it. So the overall scale score will be reported on the individual student report. A scaled subscore will also be reported on the student report. So the students will get a score in life science, earth science, and physical science. Now, the thing I don't like about this, okay, is that before we changed to new standards, we reported in life science, earth science, and physical science, and maybe some skills category or something like that, right? So what I don't like about this is it doesn't send the message that these are brand new standards and we spent 2 years field testing for a reason. We really did, but we found that the best way to combine the data and communicate it clearly was still using those domains. Now, if you look at the topic bundles and you know, if you understand topic bundles, you'll understand that some of those are naturally integrated. So for example, the life science information processing topic bundle, which is in fifth grade life science, actually includes physical science performance expectations about how light works. Okay, so there's some natural integration of the topic bundles that occur. Now, that particular topic bundle, even though it includes that physical science standard, is going to be reported in life science. Does that make sense? So we're not having complete tearing apart. The other thing is we chose not to report about science and engineering practices, disciplinary core ideas, and cross-cutting concepts individually for a few reasons. One, I get 1 point for an item. I say that that item is integrating a science and engineering practice and a cross-cutting concept. My only choice then would be to put 1 point in each bucket, which doesn't provide me any more information about what a student can do or not do, right? And the other thing is, in the theory of three-dimensional learning in science, we don't want to tease those things apart. Okay, in your classroom, you absolutely can tease those things apart, and really work with your kids in a particular practice, or think about a particularly difficult disciplinary core idea through the lens of modeling, or think about systems, you know, all of those things you can do in your classrooms and in your local assessments. On the state assessment, it's really hard to do, and hard to do well, okay? You will also have performance level descriptors available on your reports, and these are going to be short descriptions of what those different performance levels mean. So if you're basic or below basic or proficient or advanced, you will have a written description of what that means for science. Okay? The report will not include item level information or standards distribution. All the things you want will not be there. Sorry. I know, sorry. It's just not possible. And it's not really relevant given the fact that students are going to get 44 items. Okay? And the fact that the way that we design the item clusters, we tore the PEs apart to make them. Okay? Yes.
That's on a student report, but at a district, or you're going to go into cluster information, or are you just saying we're just getting a scale score for a student, and we have three scores, physical science, life science, and earth science. At the district building, basically, teachers aren't going to be able to do any analysis of
the results. So we are going to try to provide more information at the district level. And that's coming up. You're my spoiler alert. Thanks. one thing I do want to say, though, is that preliminary reports will not be available for 2020. Okay? We haven't set standards yet. Therefore, we cannot send out preliminary reporting data. We have nothing to base it off of. All the scaling, all of the hard work has to be done this spring once that data comes in. Then we have to have our standard setting meeting. Then we have to figure out what that means for students and how those reports are put together, and then those reports can go out. So likely you can expect those later in the summer. This is the MDE later in the summer. Okay, we all know what that means? Okay, cool. Just checking. Now, in development, this is what you were asking, sir. Our district and school level reports, I have vehemently asked for these reports over the years, and recently was called into a meeting saying, did you want another report? And I said, yes, I did. And this will provide topic bundle information to assist with programmatic decisions regarding curriculum assessment, staffing, blah, blah, blah. So whatever you do with these reports is your business, but these will likely be available in October because they're in development. There aren't other programs that necessarily put out reports like these, and I want them to be useful to you. So we're working on the report development. We're also working on the supplementary information to help you glean the most information from those reports. So for example, if you as a district or a school, if you're big enough, get a topic bundle report that says, in physical science, chemistry, you're rocking, forces and interactions, no go, homies. We're going to want to make sure that you are provided with support about what that means. What's in that topic bundle? What are the practices? What are the cross-cutting concepts? What are the DCIs? Where might you go for more information to help you discern what's actually going on? How can you analyze your local assessments for that information? That type of stuff. We want to make sure that you're supported in that. And so with the development of this report comes the development of that support as well. I'll stop here. Get out the fruit and start throwing. Yes, yeah, once we build it, it's easier to kind of, but all the framing and all this, all the work on the back end that I really have no idea what happens. I just talk to people and say, please do this. And they do, they're wonderful. all of that has to be built this year. Once it's built, it's easier to push forward in future years. Yeah, for sure. Other questions? And if you don't know, this is where you find resources for reports. Again, you guys can get to this using the MAC website. They'll provide you with a slideshow. But I found it really interesting to talk to people about, well, yeah, we have a resource on our website. And people go, have you looked at your website? So I just want to make sure I pointed you directly there if you need information about reporting. Accountability. Super fun. All right. So science test participation continues to be included in the parent dashboard and school index as it has been throughout the years. So once we started field testing, participation was mandatory. That's why I thanked you all for participating earlier, because you didn't have a choice. And so test participation is part of your school index score. If you look at that part, it's less than 0.5%. Test proficiency will resume being reported on the My School Data and the parent dashboard piece for like federal accountability for the school index. We have to seek a waiver to actually include science proficiency into our accountability school index piece. So for right now, 0.5% or less is the test participation part, is what like hits your school on that school index score. However, all of the messaging that goes out and those fabulous reporters that get a hold of data and put out those great news stories around that time, they will see the test the proficiency, because that's public data. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
So even if though it's only, you know, whatever you just said, 20,
a small amount. Small, yeah. Mm-hmm.
For the index, it is a huge piece for identification.
Absolutely. Right, yes. Absolutely. It is used in many, many different ways. It is not, however, used for the school index score on the accountability or on the proficiency piece. Participation is. Proficiency is not. I just want to make that clear. Yes? Is that clear as mud? Cool. Not yet. Part of that, I think, has to do with our peer review process, ensuring that our test passes peer review and all of that good stuff. But it is something that's continuously like on the docket for consideration in Michigan. You're welcome. Okay, so just to clue you guys into some ongoing work and development that's going on with the test, we spent 5 years building the new test for science in Michigan, and yet there's still more work to be done. Currently, we're looking at cognitive complexity. As far as we know it in Michigan, we've used DOK for years, and we use DOK in all of our other programs. However, we found in science, DOK does not work. Okay? If you think about verbs, if you think about all the things you know as far as the levels of DOK, and then you look at our performance expectations, they kind of start to clash. And when we look at those, we say, well, nothing in science should be recall, so there goes level one. And we can't actually like make stuff, right, on a large scale test, so there goes level four. So we're stuck with two levels. And usually that's not enough to discern information about what students know cognitively or can do. So we are working on a new cognitive complexity framework we met this spring to think about what that might look like. This comes out of some research from Mirai Tikamaru-Kisa in Florida State University. She has worked with thinking about cognitive complexity across three dimensions in two different ways. The first is on the item level. So when you're thinking about items, does the item present complexity across the various dimensions? So is there a practice complexity? Is there a DCI complexity? And where does that fall from a range of low, medium, or high? And then she also thinks about at the cluster level, so at the whole cluster, what is the complexity of that cluster with respect to how much is it scaffolded, okay? So when you're thinking about how much you script or scaffold something for a student, you innately take away some complexity the more scaffolding you give them. And so she proposed four levels of scaffolding. So we have a scripted integration, and this is where well-defined actions or procedures are given to the student, and they perform those. And then we have this low guidance, this low guided integration. So this is considered, it's multidimensional, the task itself is multidimensional, yet there's a lot of scripting. Once you get into this higher area, your scripting becomes less. And then we get up to doing science, which is the act of actually completing what a scientist would. And one of my good friends in Delaware says that scripted integration is like glamping, right? You're going out into the woods, but all the comforts of home are there. We're gonna be okay, microwave set. Our next level is like rustic camping. Okay, we still have a tent, we're okay. High guided is kind of like Survivor. Okay, they're mostly on their own with a little bit of scaffold. The guy's gonna give you an apple if you're gonna starve. It'll be okay. Any ideas for doing science? Yep. You are on your own. So this is just an interesting way to think about the levels of complexity a student might have to like process through when we're thinking about how tasks are supported. Both at the state level, but also across Michigan. So our idea for this is to develop out a Michigan's version of this framework and hold a shareholders design meeting, which we did. And so currently we have a draft Michigan framework for this. Eventually what we wanna do is we wanna apply that Michigan framework to our current state items to kind of see where we're landing. And then we're gonna design some communication and then classroom tools so that teachers can start to understand how we're thinking about cognitive complexity in a way that's different than DOK. So this is the long-term plan for what that looks like. We'd like to communicate that out because we feel as though if we want to have a balanced assessment system, we need to ensure that all of our tools go across that system. Another thing we did this spring is we held a group together to think about multi-point scoring. So some of you brought up the point that currently you get a 1 or a 0 for all the things that you do on a particular science item. And that may not be fair or what's best for students or provide us the most information about what students actually know. And so we put together a group to really analyze some of our items and think about the consequences, I think, of what a multi-point scoring system might look like and how we would integrate that with our original design idea, being that if you get 1 point and you have to go through multiple steps, and those steps are broken apart and scaffolded, but still represent 2 or 3 dimensions, then we can make a 3-dimensional argument about that particular item. If we start giving points to various pieces of that, what does that do to our 3-dimensional argument? And so we need to do a little bit more work around this, and we're developing currently our internal systems to be able to handle something like a multi-point scoring framework. So this is gonna take a little bit longer to develop, but it is in the works. Yes?
Back on your last screen.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys take into consideration reading abilities of students and even cultural differences in terms of interpreting the questions?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good question. She asked if we take into consideration reading ability of students and cultural differences with respect to interpreting questions on the test. We do take this into consideration. Two of our kind of gates for that. The first is when we design our items, we ensure that the verbiage and the language on the test is written 2 grade levels below where the student is assessed. So if the student is being assessed at a grade 5 level, the sentence structure, the words used are grade 3. Now the exception to that is if the word is actually talked about in the standard. So if it's a grade 5 standard that has, say like, I don't think it's grade 5, but hydrosphere, say. And we know that's not a grade 3 word, but say it's in the standard at grade 5, we can include that on the test. Does that make sense? As far as the cultural relevance goes and the cultural, the pieces of our test and how folks might interpret it, we have a bias and sensitivity group that comes together and reviews every single item that goes on the assessment. Part of what that group is guided to do is to think about different populations of students, both culturally and with respect to their abilities, to ensure that our items are accessible and relevant and non-biased for students across Michigan. I will say that there's a lot of work nationally going on about equity in assessments and how we can put forward more equity in assessments. So I think this is an area that we can all grow and develop, and that's something that's always on my mind as I'm looking at tests. So I think that's something that we'll continually grow on, but currently we do have those two gates that an item has to pass through in order to make it onto our test. Okay, real quickly, if you guys are wanting to know what the assessment looks like and how to prepare students, I was part of this group called the Task Annotation Project in Science. It was a TAPS project. This was put together by Achieve. And what's cool about this project is we developed a task screener, a pre-screener, and a screener that involves some checklists and some deeper analysis about what a good 3D assessment looks like. So, if you're in your schools and you're wondering, is this assessment a good 3D assessment? These are tools you can use. I can talk to you more about that in depth. I could go on and on about this, but I just wanted to let you know that these are out there. The other thing that came with this project were annotations of tasks that have been released nationally. So, tasks from the SNAP project in Stanford, from our own MSU's Create for STEM. These tasks were submitted for annotation, and we used the two rubrics I showed you earlier in order to annotate the tasks to show what they were doing well as far as their three-dimensionality and the things on that rubric and what they could improve on. So this project is out there if you're interested in learning more about that. The Michigan Math Science Leadership Network has lots of professional development regarding formative and summative assessments. Those opportunities are always available. And then, of course, the STEM teaching tools, if you're not familiar with these are all wonderful tools for developing assessments, thinking about three-dimensionally aligned instruction, and those types of things. So what can you do? Find opportunities to learn about assessment literacy. Challenge yourself and your colleagues to change at least 5% of your assessments in 1 year. And then take the sample clusters. How many of you have sat down and taken the sample clusters from the state like a student would? Okay. Do that. Okay. I did that. I designed them. And I see these things a lot over and over and over again. And then I sat down on a Chromebook with some other teachers and took it like a student would and went, oh, now I get it. Okay, so it's a really aha moment. If you haven't taken the time to do that, please do. It's a really good learning experience, and you can think about how is this testing experience different from when you were in school. I don't know about you guys, but I took Iowa basic skills tests and remember the MEEP and all of that stuff, right? This is very different. And so we need to be thinking about how do we address test-taking strategies that are often taught in schools and maybe need to be shifted a little bit given the new test. And then what affordances does this design offer your students? So where might students succeed on the new assessment that they may not have before? I get lots of questions from the field. How should I test prep my kids? Okay. I think just providing that continual opportunities to think about and learn science through the use of phenomenon is the best way you can prep your students. But then also encourage them to pay attention to data, infographics, and actually read what's on the assessment. It's really important, amazingly so. And here's some opportunities if you want to get involved in my work and like see more of me in the summer. because who doesn't love that? This QR code will take you directly to our application, so I should see phones out, ready to go. This is great, right? Anyways, that's all I have to say today. I'm sure you guys have questions, so I do want to leave some time for that.
Is this on the resource page as well?
Yeah, the whole PowerPoint is uploaded there, so you can review the slides, study the slides, be one with the slide. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. If anybody has other questions, feel free to stay in chat. I'm here. Otherwise, have a fabulous day. Thank you for being here, and I appreciate your time.